This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to 3-3-1 Cast. This podcast is your pit stop for a comedic but educational take on the crazy and illustrious world of Formula One.
We will take you through the latest news and happenings, while also offering our views and perspectives on the key moments, both on and off the track. So, to quote the great David Croft of Sky Sports F1,
it's lights out and away we go.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of 3-3-1 Cast. You're joined here with just me and Josh this afternoon.
Hello there. How are we?
We are good. We are good. It is just the two pre's again today.
That's Stephen the one.
Will be back next time.
He will be.
We can assure you.
For the Singapore Grand Prix.
From the Singapore Grand Prix. We can assure you today we'll have a shortened episode. We're going to quick fire through some hot subjects and basically just discuss some of the news that's been going on in the world of F1 as it never rests.
It never stops. Yeah. So, who knows how long this episode will take. You know, we'll try to squeeze it out as much as we can. But yes, we're going to deliver you a few goodies. Mm. And we can start with some updates on the seats and everything.
It's still kind of silly seasonal wee, but I reckon it's calmed down a bit.
A little bit, but there's definitely still some questions in the air going forward.
Yeah. I'd say the mid-table and probably a few mid-table teams and definitely a couple lower-table teams are still without their 2023 complete driver lineup.
That's right.
What's caught your eye, Josh?
Okay, well, big story has been the Red Bull team trying to get an American driver called Colton Herta into their junior racing team, AlphaTauri. And, he was 8 points short of the necessary 40 points to get a super license. So you need to get 40 points in other racing championships to qualify.
For Formula One. Right, I see.
And so Colton Herta had 32. But Red Bull were applying to bypass that, essentially, and get him in there. Huh. And there was a lot of predictions. Would it come through? Some people just did not believe it would ever happen. And as they predicted was true, FIA just rejected it a few days ago.
Oh, right. Okay.
And as a result, it seems like they're going to keep Pierre Gasly on.
I see.
At AlphaTauri. Yep. Because as you saw, he was wanted at Alpine, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a national French team and Pierre Gasly's massive in France.
Yeah.
So it would have been a pretty much bit of a match made in heaven as well, probably an upgrade as well for Pierre driver seat-wise.
He needs something different, doesn't he?
I think so. I think this year he's stagnated. And I was personally quite surprised when they handed Tsunoda the extension. I think... For the ambition that is often in AlphaTauri and for the Red Bull driver lineup, I mean, I can't see Yuki Tsunoda ever driving a Red Bull.
Mm.
And I don't know. Maybe it's because they're biding their time. There's nobody else that's really caught their eye, and at least Yuki's got a bit of experience now.
It's got to be that. It's got to be maybe a lack of other options at this stage, because it does seem like Yuki's made quite a few mistakes even this year. So I guess it's nice to see him get one more year to prove himself a little bit better.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see it.
Yeah, that's true. It's not like he's not too much of a polarizing character or anything. I think it's just it's been interesting because I think he's also had cultural fits that have been a part of the problem. You know, like they've had to bring in like a psychologist to help him temper his rage when he makes mistakes. Like, I guess it's stuff like that that then it's surprising to see all of these elements and that he still gets the extension. Because, I mean, Formula One's so cutthroat. You know, if you look at it, it's the top 20 drivers in the world. Right?
Exactly.
And even someone like Yuki, who's obviously made lots of mistakes, has needed psychologists brought in. Clearly, they still pick him in that top 20 and he's worth keeping around. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting. But I was quite excited for Gasly to go to Alpine.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, Alpine still have such a big seat open for Pierre Gasly. Because their other driver, Esteban Ocon, is still firmly in there for a few years.
Yeah, so he's signed a, he's back when he did last sign, it was a 3-year contract taking him through to 2024. Right. So, yeah, I mean, I think Esteban Ocon is pretty settled there. And I'm sure he's still somewhat part of the project going forward. So Gasly was probably going to be... would you say Gasly would have came in as the number one driver, or would Ocon be?
You couldn't say for sure, eh? You'd have to see within the first few races how Gasly adjusts to this different style. I'd say Ocon would have the advantage going in at this stage. Because, I mean, he has been this year scoring consistently in the middle of the top 10.
Absolutely.
So that's, as usual, he's quietly doing his thing and doing pretty well at it.
So I guess that leaves the Alpine seat kind of still open and up for grabs. I mean...
Yes, and De Vries, as we talked about last time, had such a great debut. Mm-hmm. And another thing that's happened since we last talked is that Latifi is officially leaving.
Yes, saw that.
Williams, and probably leaving F1, if we're honest.
Did you shed a tear?
Oh, shed a slight tear at the news.
Oh, I don't know. It was almost like when Mazepin left for good reason.
Yeah, no, I am joking. Yeah,
I mean, but like, it was also kind of sad because sometimes, like, when you have these slightly more meme characters in the sport, it's like another element, you know? Like,
yeah, they are fun to watch and see how they go and if they can beat the expectations and beat the odds, I guess.
I think I'll miss Latifi being, you know, lapped come lap 20. You know, like, there's just something about, like, and him being 21st in the driver's standings in, like, a 20-man championship. Like, just things like that I will miss. I will miss for sure.
Yeah, yeah. But it did seem pretty clear that he really should not be staying any longer.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Tsunoda, you know, because this is Latifi's third year and he has not improved at all.
Correct. Yeah.
So it's like, no more chances of really able to be done for him.
So I wonder what will happen then with his dad's investment into the team. Like, are we going to then, clearly, because I think what we sort of agreed on last time we were here and we were talking about this was this decision, whether Latifi stays or not, will show more about Williams's financial situation.
Yeah.
Because if they keep him for no good reason, because he's not bringing the results, clearly it's a financial decision. If they get rid of him, clearly they believe they can continue to thrive or attract more sponsorship if Michael Latifi pulls his finances out. So clearly, like, they must back themselves to go and either get more sponsorship or do without.
Because that's good news.
Yeah, it's
good. I mean, Williams have shown some slight improvement from the last few years, so there's a bit of promising momentum there, so maybe that would attract some investors in. But yeah, De Vries doesn't really bring in any money, so he would have to come in and promise, and they would have to show a lot of promise of the team scoring higher in the constructors.
But I think that's it, right? Like, you don't build if you look at a model team that has sort of been built into a winning team, like Red Bull, right? Obviously they've been gradually rising for a long time, but they've always invested in talent. Like, they started being successful when they invested in talent and had young driver programs and built their way up. Whereas I think if you have a team like Williams has been sort of, and to an extent, Haas has also been in this sort of, when they had that Rich Energy sponsor, and then obviously they got involved with the Mazepins. When you build a team off the back of, you know, money that's just... then you have a driver lineup that has the owner's son in. It's the same with Aston Martin, like with Lance Stroll. Lance Stroll's never kicked on to do anything that major. I just don't think that's the winning formula. So if Williams are going to run it lean for a bit and hopefully just have like an exciting lineup and De Vries now one, that might be them.
Yeah, it is a gamble, but you'd like to see it. I mean, like Haas always, there was that meme, the Haaster plan, which was that they would get through those years with the rich sponsors and put up with the sponsorship with the Russian flag and all that kind of thing because they were working towards a better car for this year. They were going to just push through, and that has seemingly worked out for them.
I think it's done pretty well,
so we just have to see if Williams can do that now, if they've had some kind of plan yeah. that they can now execute.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I always forget the guy's name who's it's Jost. Jost.
Yeah.
Yes, it's like Jost Capito.
Let me search that up for you. Jost Capito.
That's it. Jost Capito. He came from Rally, I believe. Yeah. But yeah, I've like been reading some stuff about him. Apparently, he's a very inspiring leader, and he works really, really well with like the young drivers and stuff like that. So Alex Albon and him have yeah. a really good relationship.
He did seem like a really nice guy on Drive to Survive.
Yeah, he did.
It's interesting yeah. to see he's the CEO and the team principal.
Yeah.
of Williams. So he's really the
he's very invested though, right? Like. So, yeah, there yeah. must be a plan. There must be something. I think if they were to get Nyck de Vries, I mean, I have, obviously, those rumors are still around. Like, there is that seat at Alpine potentially as well.
Yeah.
I think if Nyck de Vries was going to be selfish and think purely on that, he'd 100% go for the Alpine
of
seat.
Course. Yeah, no
but
question.
He obviously enjoyed his time at Williams last time out. So,
yeah.
I don't know. That'll be a very interesting one.
That'll be very interesting. And I think the other most interesting thing is to see where Mick Schumacher ends up.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Because he is still not confirmed a seat next year.
Yeah.
And all you really have left at this stage is Haas. Wait, is there one at Alfa Romeo still?
Yes. So Zhou yeah. Guanyu is not been confirmed either. For next year.
Yeah. yeah. So there's only the four seats then, yeah. is that right?
I mean, I've read a lot of pieces that it's very likely that Zhou Guanyu will be there next year.
Okay.
So, that, I mean, I guess maybe that's why there hasn't been too much speculation around, like, someone like Nyck de Vries going to Alfa Romeo.
Yeah. I don't think it would be very fair to not give Zhou another, another shot.
Yeah, I mean, the car's been pretty inconsistent,
yeah.
and he hasn't had the best luck. But he's also had a couple good results, so yeah, no, he's almost like a Tsunoda after first year. Like,
there's just not enough information.
Yeah, like not enough data to call it quits on him yet. Yeah. Like he's a young driver, like he's got a long way to go. So I'm sure he will probably stay on. But then I guess the other thing that sort of was recently sealed in between the last time we were here was Oscar Piastri signed a multi-year deal at mm-hmm. McLaren, so that seat is off the table.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very exciting to see, because it's two very young drivers now
yeah.
at McLaren. Like, they don't have that senior experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, Norris does come in with 3 or 4 years
yeah.
F1 experience, but that's not exactly a lot.
It's
in the
not, especially considering he hasn't won a race yet.
No.
So,
no.
obviously, he's had a few, good few podiums. And
so you couldn't say, oh, we've got a team of race winners.
You don't. Yeah, but the thing is, right, I think with McLaren, even in a recent couple years, their real downfall has been the car that they've provided their drivers. It has just not been as good as the top teams.
Yeah.
And I feel like you've got Piastri and Norris now, okay? So they'll be on multi-year long deals. So you've got some good young talent ready to adapt and work and mold to the car. Now give them a good car. This is it. McLaren. All the sort of pressure will now largely be on the engineers and what they can pull together, I think.
Yeah, and such a competitive, I mean, yeah, I could see them actually pulling into being where Ferrari is this year.
Yeah, that's a fair call.
Yeah.
That's a fair call. I'd say
maybe not next year, but
maybe not next year. I'd say next year, if they could be sort of how McLaren have been chomping at the bit on just on the tail ends of Ferrari and a little bit of Red Bull.
Oh, you mean Mercedes?
Mercedes, yeah. So how they've been sort of just clinging onto the coattails off Ferrari and Red Bull. I think if McLaren can have that next year, that will be a very good step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think a big part of that will be the, first of all, the competitiveness between Piastri and Norris and seeing if they're really pushing to outdo each other and be the number one.
Yeah.
And also to see if Piastri is just this like super talent like Max Verstappen kind of was.
We've had to wait so long to see him. I mean, he's on his journey into Formula One, he's won every championship he's sat in through F2, F3.
Yeah.
So everyone's been waiting with anticipation. He's got a good seat. He'll have a pretty good car, but I think the problem McLaren have at the moment is it's a bit of a, like a, I wonder if they have Alpine almost equal distance behind them as they are equal distance behind Mercedes. So they're in this kind of weird, should we go on the, you know, do we have to keep
defensive
looking?
Defensive or offensive?
Exactly. Like, are we looking in the rearview mirror at what they're doing, or should we be constantly looking forward? At hopefully they're looking forward, but
yeah,
McLaren's going to be interesting next year. It's probably a good thing Ricciardo's moving on.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you think Ricciardo will race next year in Formula One?
No, I mean, I don't think he's just very appealing to any of the drivers. And I'd say Williams could do better even with De Vries. Even Alpine can do better with someone like De Vries or Mick Schumacher. Just a lot more interest and exciting to have someone younger come in than to have someone like Ricciardo, who you know is, first of all, very short-term, and it just seems like the sun is well and truly set.
Yeah, he's stagnated. And I don't think he suits many projects either. Like, maybe his best bet was actually getting into Aston Martin, because clearly they were happy to hand a multi-year deal to a 42-year-old Fernando Alonso.
True.
But that horse has left the station. Yep. It is gone. And he won't fit AlphaTauri, because they're essentially the Red Bull's young drivers program. They're not going to put...
Hell no.
That's all more of an insult to Ricciardo if they put him in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know,
I think... There's Haas as well, but I'd be gutted, because I'm kind of a fan of Haas,
mm-hmm.
and I'd be gutted if Ricciardo was in there, because I'd be like, right, well, that's one driver who's not going to be scoring well. That's just my immediate thought, and I just don't know how you could justify...
I just don't even think he fits the project there. Like, they've got, like, I think you look at most teams, they're pretty balanced with a slightly older driver and a young driver. So, like, even like Red Bull, obviously young Max, slightly older Sergio Perez. In Ferrari, you've got Sainz, who's a little older, Leclerc, who's a little bit younger. McLaren's a bit of an exception with two really young drivers. But again, like, it just, that's the pattern all the way throughout. Mm-hmm. And then you even get to a team like Alfa Romeo, who potentially would have a seat for Ricciardo, but I would say Bottas is their slightly older, slightly more experienced senior driver.
At this point, yeah.
So why would you wouldn't have Bottas and Ricciardo, because that leaves you pretty short on a young driver coming through who can light it up for you.
Yeah, exciting talent that can improve for your team.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that could be a good prediction to look back on. Well, we'll find out within a few weeks, I reckon.
We will.
If Daniel Ricciardo will be gone next year.
If you were Gunther, which we'd all love to be Gunther Steiner, would you re-sign Mick Schumacher? And before you answer that question, try and remove all bias of being a fan of Haas. Like, on a performance basis, do you think you'd re-sign Mick Schumacher?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because, I mean, there's been a few, like, moments where he's raced really hard and, like, not given up. So he's got this real drive. Like, he's been racing right up against Max Verstappen. I mean, that was when Verstappen had a slightly damaged car, but still it showed real guts to risk. I think it was when he was first time in the points looking to finish, and he was racing really hard to get even a better result.
Yeah.
And that just shows real guts.
That was at Silverstone, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was at Silverstone.
Yeah.
And he had another good outing at the Red Bull Ring in Austria.
That's right. So if I look here, he's had back-to-back points at Austria. Oh, no, sorry. He had back-to-back points at Britain and Austria.
Yeah.
Yep. And he got 8 and 6. Eight points at Britain and 6 at Austria. So other than that, though, he has not scored points. Though he came 11th in Bahrain. And other than that, not really much to say. 12th in Italy, our last race.
Okay, my follow-up question to you on this. If his last name was not Schumacher and it was, I don't know, Johnson, if it was Mick Johnson racing for there and you were looking at it, would you have him
We'd
back
probably
in?
Be like, get the hell out.
Probably get out.
Get out. You're done. You've had your chance. Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, I don't think it's fair to measure Schumacher from the first year, because the Haas car was so
terrible.
Bad.
Yeah.
And you could not really see, like, how well he was compared to Mazepin, because Mazepin was just so bad.
Yeah.
This year, Magnussen has outperformed him, but Magnussen has, what, four more years experience?
Yeah.
He started in 2017, 18, 19, 20. Yeah. So, Yeah, I think Schumacher...
3 years. He was 1 year out of the sport.
Yeah, in 2021. Yeah. No, I'd say that, yes, if he didn't have his last name, he would be a lot...
More
there'd be a lot less patience,
right?
And he'd be more scrutinised. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, there is that spark there, and I don't know, in my opinion as well, like, it isn't just a last name. It is also a bloodline, and there's clearly a very talented athlete in there. So, I mean, I can still somewhat justify them, you know, making that a factor for him staying.
Yeah, I'd say that's the best choice right now. Give him another year. Schumacher would obviously prefer something like Alpine for himself, for his career, but I'm sure he's not going to turn up his nose at a seat.
Yeah. Well, I would say as well, like, surely his end goal must be to race for Ferrari, right?
Yeah, I think that is his clear end goal, isn't it?
And I think the pathway from Haas to Ferrari would be a lot clearer than if he jumped into the seat of, like, an AlphaTauri, where, you know, if Red Bull took him, it would be as part of probably their, like, you know, potential future building lineup, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. I think he is... If he races next year, in my opinion, it will either be with Haas, most likely to be with Haas, or it will be with Alfa Romeo, and they would choose him over Zhou Guanyu, just because I think he suits the project, and I think his aspiration to race for Ferrari is really well aligned with Alfa Romeo.
Because they both use the Ferrari engine.
Power unit, yeah.
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 So.
And I mean, like, Ferrari kind of uses Alfa Romeo sometimes as, like, a bit of a testing ground. Obviously, Charles Leclerc came from there. And then Antonio Giovinazzi raced through there, who had come through the Ferrari Academy and was kind of touted to eventually race for Ferrari, but that kind of went downhill.
No, he just didn't. Yeah, really turn into
very good. But yeah, I mean, the silly season will continue. We'll keep you guys all up to date with the rumours and the ones that get confirmed, because I'm sure there'll be a lot more to happen over
Absolutely.
The coming weeks.
Yes, we'll analyse it when it all comes out to you.
Yeah.
Now, what do you want to do now? Do you want to do the history of Haas, or do you have some stories to tell us, Rory?
I'll share a couple stories. Formula One is something that I've become very passionate about, as have you, Josh, over the last couple of years or so. But we can't claim to be lifelong fans. I mean, the fact we're only sort of 22, 23, it's hard to be a lifelong fan of anything at that point. But I've really enjoyed, like, sort of heading back through the archives of Formula One and just finding a few little crazy happenings and stories, because from what I can tell, and people in my family who've been Formula One fans for ages can testify to this, Formula One used to be a very rugged, very, I'd say, unrefined sport. You had a lot of
drama. It was almost like adrenaline junkie kind of thing.
Yeah, 100%. It was not this sort of superstar lifestyle, celebrity status sport industry that it is now. It was a lot more nitty and gritty, and I think some of these stories I'm about to tell kind of shows that. So one I'd like to share first of all was from 1982, and it was in the German Grand Prix, which was actually won by Patrick Tambay for Ferrari. But the headline that took all the newspapers by storm in 1982 after the German Grand Prix race was a punch-up between Nelson Piquet and Elizio Salazar. I think I probably butchered that last name. But essentially what happened is after the race had finished, before the race had finished, this was on the closing laps, Nelson Piquet collided with Salazar at one of the chicanes. And at the time, he was leading the race. And after that, basically, they both collided as they were going through the chicanes, hit the tyres. They both sprung out of their car, stormed over to each other, started having words, and then Nelson Piquet starts flying in with punches and kicking and stuff. So it was, you don't really see that these days.
Yeah. No, I obviously very much disapprove of that from Piquet. Like, you can have hard words, and we see that even now.
Yeah.
People yelling, getting emotional, but definitely, like, It's the lesser man that would then go to blows. I don't care. It doesn't really matter what Salazar said. Does it say? No, it's not even what he said necessarily,
because I don't think Salazar really had much of a chance to say anything. It was more that, well, look, Salazar was in the wrong. He literally did not give him any room through the chicane and took Nelson out when he was about to win the German Grand Prix for the first time. So Nelson was fuming at that and just obviously kicked off. But I guess the most similar thing we've seen to that recently was when George Russell had a crack at Valtteri Bottas at Imola.
Yeah, last season. Smacked his helmet.
Yeah, walked over. I mean, and again, that was kind of George's fault, trying to overtake around the outside really late on one of the straights at Imola and then going and smacking his helmet. But Bottas
is pretty calm. We all know how we feel about that. It's just, you've got to not be doing that.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
Because I think it really does show great character when you have this intense emotion and frustration. Even for Piquet, yes, it's a big deal to win that Grand Prix for the first time, but if you can still be classy about it, and that's actually something that made me respect Lewis Hamilton a hell of a lot more at the end of 2021, Azerbaijan. Was it the Azerbaijan? Or was it Abu Dhabi? Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. How Lewis Hamilton handled that defeat, even with all the emotions he would have been feeling.
Yeah.
He was able to interview well, congratulate, And it was very classy, and that's something I respect a lot.
I mean, far out as a competitor and off the level that Lewis is at to somehow hold that in.
Let alone if he'd lost fairly or if he'd lost in a controversial way where he could complain, he didn't.
And to be fair, and then after that he went off social media for a month or two, which I also understand because there is no good way that you can necessarily, it would have been.
He was probably just punching a boxing bag again and again.
Yeah, with Michael Massey's face just straight into it, I would say.
That's what I imagine I would do.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, no, hang on. You'd go one next level. If you're Lewis Hamilton, you're a multi-millionaire.
True.
Would have a rubber cast dummy off probably Max Verstappen and Michael Massey, and you'd just spend most of your days kicking them.
Or you just drive one of your many sports cars and have those dummies in the driveway and smack into them.
Absolutely. Oh,
but yes, any other stories?
Yeah, there's another one. As I tell you it, I will show you the video, Josh, so you can comment on it, and we might put some screenshots up on the Instagram afterwards.
Sounds good.
But in 2010, during a practice session, a Red Bull driver named Sebastian Buemi had a very nasty surprise. Now, Josh, if you just click play on that video, as he was driving down, I actually can't recall what circuit.
Oh, wow.
Both wheels simultaneously just exploded off the front of his Red Bull.
And he's going super fast.
And he obviously goes in and hits the barrier. But it was, I think it was through a suspension failure that he's just driving along and suddenly both wheels blow off.
That is such a weird sight to see.
It is a very peculiar crash. And then I watched the interview afterwards, and that surprised me because he was so cool and calm and collected about it. Because they said, are you going to feel a bit anxious driving in the race? And are you going to feel nervous that it might happen again? He was like, no, because it was so unlikely. It's probably not going to happen ever again in Formula 1. And that was good enough for him, clearly.
That was good enough for him. I mean, when did that happen?
2010. I'm just trying to have a look. What? Was that the Shanghai International Circuit? So it was in the Chinese Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And it was not a Red Bull. It was a Toro Rosso.
Oh, okay.
So formerly what AlphaTauri was. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that is unusual.
Yeah. My last story that I will conclude with dates back to 1955. So there was a racing driver who was very successful in his time named Alberto Ascari, and he was competing in his final Formula One race and was racing his Lancia out of the tunnel in the 1995 Monaco Grand Prix, where he lost control and crashed through the barrier. Now, if you can sort of recall the rough sort of layout of the Monaco Grand Prix, as you exit the tunnel, you end up driving around the coastline a wee bit. Now, in 1955, the safety standards and the cars were so much smaller, and it was basically a bit of a coming together of some nasty variables that then meant that Alberto Ascari crashed through the barrier and ended up in the sea with his Formula One car sinking to the bottom of the ocean.
Wow.
So at that point, he obviously had to get out and swim to the edge. And they were like, everyone was freaking out because no one had prepared for this. Now, even nowadays, what you'll see as well at Monaco is, even though all the safety is a lot better, the barriers are so much better, they still have water ambulances sitting out at the points of the track where something could happen.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it could still happen. They're going so fast, like you, if you kind of hit it wrong, you could maybe hit through the barrier.
I reckon it's like, do you remember what happened to Zhou Guanyu when his car like flipped and just went crazy?
Yeah,
and, yeah, like I think, especially considering coming out of the tunnel at Monaco, if there's a collision like that, maybe then a car could fly up over the barrier, which would obviously then lend to having a water taxi.
Terrifying to think if you were knocked unconscious and that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
you're just, yeah, you're strapped in there. But it is such a bizarre thought to think of of being in danger of drowning while driving an F1 car. Like, I mean, there must not be many tracks where that is even coming into the mind.
Yeah.
But Monaco would be one of them.
But as it turns out, for Alberto Ascari, he actually got off super lucky. Like, he had like a scratch on his nose and some bruised ribs, and that was it. And he comfortably just swam
to shore. From a 1955 car as well.
Yeah, exactly. So he was super lucky. He's a legend of the sport as well.
Yeah, that's pretty badass to walk away from that.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming, yeah, like that didn't stop him from racing. It's just,
well, that was his final Formula One race.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I don't know. I don't have the stats up in front of me. I don't know if that was intended to be his final F1 race. The fact that it's in Monaco, I think probably not. Usually Monaco has never been historically the final race of the season. But yeah, I feel like it was like when Romain Grosjean, when he, after his horror crash, ended it after that because there was no real need for him to come back and race too much more.
Yeah, so and totally respect that.
Absolutely. So, yeah, there's three little tidbit stories.
Really, yeah, those are all stories that I've never heard of and are, like,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, there's a heap more. We can jump back through some more on another episode. But, yeah, it just goes to show there are some crazy things that have happened in the world of Formula One. And I think we'll try and put up an Instagram photo of those two wheels blowing off Buemi's car.
But yeah.
Yes.
No, very good. I mean, I think I'd like to give you a little history here of Haas.
I know very little about Haas. I think my knowledge of them expands from what Drive to Survive has taught me, and that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of similar, though I've always had an interest in the team because I love Gunther.
Gunther the goat.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, they've always been quite a funny team, like even with Mazepin, like you can always just see what they've been up to. But let me ask you this then, if you don't know much, do you know when they started racing? What year?
When did Haas start racing? I'm going to take a wild stab. 2010?
Ooh, no, so 2016.
Oh, okay, I was
quite new.
I don't know, for some reason, I don't know where that number came from, but it was stuck in my head, but no, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's
no, fair. So 2016, and looking at kind of, you know, how they've done points-wise, they started off pretty well. They finished eighth with 29 points, and then, so that Romain Grosjean started in 2016, and he scored all the points for them. Other guy, Esteban Gutierrez, nothing. So he got the boot, and Kevin Magnussen came in.
Yeah, came in.
And that year, they got 47 points and still eighth in 2017. 2018 was a very interesting year. They got 93 points and fifth in the World Championship construction. And
that's pretty
solid. Both drivers did pretty well there. So it was actually really interesting to see that they haven't always been kind of like a joke team. Like within their third year, they were like right up there.
And then from my memory, and I'm sure you'll get onto 2019, is that when Rich Energy came in to sponsor them? So was it off the back of that success?
Actually, it looks like they had a bit of a decline in 2019, 28 points, finishing ninth, but that was still with the same two drivers.
Right.
And then it was only, and then 2020, yeah, basically a nothing year for them, 3 points. Yeah. And then 2021 is when they brought in Nikita Mazepin.
Yeah.
And they had that big sponsorship.
Ural Kali or something, Ural Kali.
Yes, that's right. And yeah, they had to change their sponsorship colours to basically look like the Russian flag.
Oh, yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, yeah. But,
yeah, I'm just looking here. Like, so the 2019 car had the Rich Energy sponsorship, which obviously didn't last very long because 2019 was such a woeful year.
Yeah. Right?
So it's interesting. They came in off the back off that good 2018 year, hoping that that was the sign of things to come, but it very much
something
so wasn't.
Changed drastically.
Yeah, wow.
But yes, following the Russian invasion of Ukraine, Haas removed the branding of Russian sponsor Ural Kali from its cars, as well as the colours of the Russian flag, and announced that they terminated their title sponsorship deal with Ural Kali and its driver contract with Mazepin with immediate effect. Kevin Magnussen, who previously drove for the team from 2017 to 2020, was announced as his replacement. So yeah, like Haas's decision was to focus on the VF22 throughout the 2021 season, which gave them a more competitive car this year in 2022.
So that's the sort of Haaster plan that everyone talks
about,
right?
Yes, and so far they have 34 points and are in 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And there are still 6 races to go. So
who's in 6th? I can't recall. It's
6th. Well, I actually don't.
Let me just have a look here, because I think they've been super competitive, but also we've seen the midfield change so much.
Mm.
So I'm trying to figure out who are they actually likely to be fighting against. Let's have a look.
Yeah.
22 constructor standings. Ah, okay. I think it's Alfa Romeo. So yeah, Alfa Romeo just above them. So currently Alfa Romeo are sitting there pretty with 52 points and Haas have 34. So there is a bit of a gap. Like,
yeah,
I don't necessarily... I don't think we could pick them to jump ahead in that. And actually they do have AlphaTauri behind them by just 1 point.
Oh, wow.
So it's close.
It is close. It is close. Haas kind of... They looked really promising, especially in the first two races this year, with Kevin Magnussen getting 5 points and then 9 points, and then on his fourth race getting 9. But yeah, they had some really good qualies, but yeah,
I think
a few DNFs.
It's probably worth remembering how terrible they were last year. And if they were to, let's say, finish the season how things stand now, if they were not only, because they were at the back with Williams, right? So if they've this year beaten Williams, Aston Martin and AlphaTauri, that is definitely a positive step in the right direction.
They should definitely take that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I should give you a little bit of background on Haas F1.
I'd be keen.
They are an American-licensed Formula One team, co-owned by Gene Haas. So they established in April 2014 and were going to debut in 2015, but they... postponed to 2018, yep. 2016, sorry. They're headquartered in North Carolina, United States, alongside with their sister team and NASCAR entrant, Stuart Haas Racing.
Okay.
Though the two teams are separate entities. And yes, Gunther Steiner has been in there since the start. Just so you know, Gunther Steiner was the previous managing director of Jaguar Racing.
Oh, okay, yep.
And the technical operations director at the subsequent incarnation, Red Bull Racing.
That's so, right, yeah, because he used to be part of the Red Bull setup.
That's right, he was there from 2005 to 2008. And then, yeah. Yes,
wow.
Haas have had a very short history, to be honest. Like, they had this ambition from Gene Haas to get in there. There's not been many American-owned Formula One teams.
Well, there's not been very... Yeah, I mean, I can't recall if this was the first American team, but it was definitely a big decision to get an American team into the sport. And I mean, I think it's now been reflected. We have now 3 races in North America.
Yeah.
So that presence and that sort of... consumer base is just growing like crazy in America,
right.
Which is great. Like, it's good for the sport to obviously grow to that level. But I mean, some people I know are quite against that Americanization of the sport and making it too, you know, unnecessarily dramatic and whatnot. But I think that was kind of inevitable. You know, I think the Formula One plan to make it such a global entity has been super successful, and America was a huge part of that.
Yeah, like America just brings in like a lot of a following as well, and they can tap into that.
100%. I would be really interested to know, out of, if you took the 100% population of American fan base for Formula One, what percentage of them would call themselves a Haas fan?
Yeah, because
and not
it's
just
an
like,
American
oh yeah,
team.
I like them, but like I am specifically a Haas fan.
But Haas to me has a German connotation. The name at least.
Yeah, it does actually.
So it's like if you went up to the average American that didn't know, and you gave them a list of all the 10
pick a team to support, teams. They'd pick Red Bull because they'd
pick
be like,
Red
I
Bull.
Know what
oh yeah,
like.
Red Bull. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's an English word. Haas just. They probably wouldn't even know it was an American
team. Probably not. But yeah, I'd just be so interested to know, because obviously there's going to be a huge attraction to the top teams like Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes and Red Bull and stuff. But yeah, like they've got their very own team that they could very easily support.
Yeah, because this is, I'll just search it up, Haas was the first American constructor
submit
to F1.
That's it. I know there's plans as well. For there to be some more. I can't remember the name of the guy who wants to bring it in, but I think there's plans for there to be another, somebody put their sort of team plan together to enter it. And obviously we have like Audi coming in 2026.
Yes, and there was that deal between Porsche and Red Bull as well, which has fallen through.
Yeah, it's fallen through now.
Because, I don't know if we've covered this, but because Porsche wanted it to be a 50-50 deal and that they both got a say in who drove for the team, and Red Bull didn't want to go for that.
Yeah.
So now Red Bull are going to build their own engines, is, you know, quite bold.
It's super bold. I mean, it's probably more annoying that Honda are backing out.
Yeah,
already.
That would have been an easy option.
I think their plan would have been to I just don't know how quickly they're going to be able to turn around a high quality engine.
Yeah,
you know, actually, like, we can't underestimate how pivotal this might be in whether Max Verstappen can become a multiple world champion past this year. You know, can he keep winning it? Can they keep supplying him with this amazing car?
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of uncertainty now.
There is.
So I'd say actually that provides a pretty big window of excitement for the likes of Ferrari, Mercedes, and hopefully McLaren.
Yes.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah. Yeah, so that was Haas.
That was Haas for you. Yeah. I mean, only, 2016? So that's only 6 years of history. So there's not much to cover.
But it's cool. It's cool that,
I'm definitely interested to see.
They're going to write it.
Yeah, like how they go, and I do like a lot of things about her, so I definitely want to keep supporting
them.
Yeah,
I think as long as Gunther's there, there'll always be a huge fan base over here at 3Pre1 Cast.
That's right. Actually, speaking of, you know, who we root for, should we like maybe go through quickly and say like who would be your top three teams that you would root for in any given race?
Yeah.
And who would be the three that you root against?
Yeah.
Like, you are happy to see them crash out. You're happy to see them.
Okay.
Low.
That's interesting. So, all right, let's start with top three teams. Who would we go for?
Who do you root for? I mean, number one, Red Bull, for me.
For you, okay. Yeah.
Because I love Perez.
Yeah.
I quite like Christian Horner as a principal. And I like the Red Bull brand. Max Verstappen has been the guy to beat Lewis Hamilton's dominance. So that's really cool.
He gave
cool
us
watch.
An unforgettable last season.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's pretty cool. Red Bull would be the one that I'm always looking to see win, hit the podiums.
Okay.
What about your number one?
My number one is definitely McLaren.
Yeah.
Like, I'd say, all in all, if there was a team I could just, like, pick up and throw them at the top of the sport, it would be McLaren. Like, I really love the Kiwi connection, but also it's still a good old-fashioned British racing company, and I really appreciate that, and I think Lando's my favourite driver on the grid as well, and I'm super excited by Oscar Piastri being there too. So, yeah, for me, McLaren is... If I had to go and buy a shirt of any of the teams...
Interesting.
McLaren shirt.
See, whereas I would get a Red Bull shirt or hat.
Yeah.
Yeah, though McLaren would be like, if I jumped the gun, they'd be the third, the team that I'd support in number three.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
So,
you're still quite a fan of them.
Yeah, I do like a lot of things about McLaren, the Kiwi connection and learning about Bruce McLaren.
Yeah.
Bruce McLaren's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would definitely root for McLaren.
So who's your number two? Who splits the...
Haas.
Haas, of course.
Yeah, yeah. So just seeing Haas, I mean, they're all going to be at different points. Like, I'm not rooting for Haas to win.
Yeah. But honestly, that's the thing with Formula One. I think, you know, a lot of people don't maybe pay as much attention as they should to the midfield, because it's not about necessarily winning the races. A team like Haas is never going to be there for
just
the foreseeable future. Like, getting points is exciting. Where people end up in the mid-table is actually really exciting. You get some really good races.
That's very true.
Yeah, yeah. It's well worth being a big fan of Haas.
Yeah, it's good to have some support for a team that's in the back five like that, because seeing Haas get to fifth again would be just as much of a cool achievement to see as seeing Red Bull win again.
Yeah, that's
if
fair.
Not more so, with the dominance at the top and seeing how clearly each driver or each team is compared to the other in those top three or four. But in the back five, it's anyone can hit the points if they get have a good race. So that can be very exciting. And Haas is my favourite of them.
Yeah, and it's cool. I think it's really nice just to have that mid-table team, that slight underdog that you can root for, especially sometimes when, you know, Max is torn away with the race, you know, and the last 15, you know how it's going to end. You know, it's really nice to be able to look down the pack and really go for a team like Haas.
So let me ask, what would be your two and three?
I'm going to slightly modify the question, and I'm going to exclude Red Bull from this, because I share the same sort of opinion. You know, like, that drama last season was just like, I'll forever love Max Verstappen for what, you know, the way he raced and some of the drama. But, and you know, I'm very happy to support that. If it's a 1-2 choice between Ferrari, Red Bull, I'll always pick Red Bull.
Interesting.
But there's two other teams that I actually really hope to do well. And one of them angers me and one of them excites me.
Okay.
So the one that excites me is Williams. I really want to see Williams back pushing for points. I think they have so much history. Again, like, it's another small team based out in Woking in the UK. Like, I would just love to see them build into a really big project and be back up there amongst the likes of McLaren and Ferrari, where they should be.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I like that. Yeah. And
Jost, I really like Jost. I think he came across brilliantly, and I love what he's doing with the team. And I also think having Alex Albon in there is great, because he's done so well considering you know, the slightly average car that they've got at the moment. So, yeah, Williams would be a strong pick for me.
Yeah, and Albon's just a really likable guy.
Yeah,
it'd be great to see him continue to succeed.
Yeah, so, and look, if they get Nick DeVries, my goodness, that will just add to it. Like, I thought he'd
be a lot of hype around Williams.
Yeah, there will be. And they'll be back being that really exciting team. And I think they can really do with that, because having, you know, Robert Kubica and Nicholas Latifi in the last few years, it's just not exciting. Obviously, George Russell, when he was there, it was exciting, but that was the only thing that people cared about for Williams. But
that's
I want to see them with a great team principal, a great ambition project, two young drivers, and a good car.
And just, like, actually competing for points.
Yeah.
So any race where Williams finishes in the points, you're happy.
I'm stoked. Yeah, that's a big win for me. Now, the other team that I want to be doing well, but I don't like the project, and I don't like the ownership, and I don't like how it's all looking, is Aston Martin. Mm-hmm. When they came back to, you know, when they sort of developed from Racing Point into Aston Martin, and they brought out that beautiful dark green Aston Martin Racing Green with that pink stripe down, so I thought, what an amazing looking car. Best looking car on the circuit. One of the worst performing ones too.
Totally.
And that's continued this year. And again, the car looks fantastic.
It really does.
Yeah. Everyone in the pits looks amazing. It's great. And I'm a big fan of Aston Martin as a brand as it is. But yeah, like, it's, I really question Alonso coming in. It's frustrating. I don't really see the merit in it. I think they could have put... because they will be paying him a lot of money. Money's not an issue with Lawrence Stroll in there owning the team. But equally, having someone like Lawrence Stroll means you're going to have Lance Stroll. And Lance Stroll, for me, is...
It's kind of like a nothing driver.
Yeah, like, I just think he's taking a seat where it's, like, I would, you know, happy for him to go and do well if he can do well, but they're just, with Lance Stroll, what it seems to be is there's just not that spark of extreme talent or skill that you see in the likes of an Alex Albon,
yeah.
Or even at some points in the season, like at Zhou Guanyu, he's shown a little bit of something, whereas Lance Stroll's just never...
Do you even get the sense that Lance Stroll is even that passionate about being there and, yeah, and doing the best he can and really pushing?
I wonder, like, that's how it does feel. Obviously, he's came from a very wealthy background, but then so have a lot of Formula One drivers who have shown spark. You know, like, Max Verstappen's dad was a very successful racing driver in his own respect and would have obviously done pretty well for himself, but Max is one of the nittiest, grittiest fights, like, he's got the biggest fight in him on the grid,
yeah,
I'd say.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point.
But yeah, Lance, like, I don't know, maybe it's like he's not so charismatic on interviews, but he doesn't come across well, like we want to support him at all costs. And I just wish that things had looked a little different for them.
I'd love to have seen Vettel stay.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, like, yeah, that was the redeeming factor for Aston Martin, was they had Vettel, who's just a legend, who's a great character. Mm. And seeing him, you know, in the points, and even that time he hit the podium and then unfortunately got disqualified.
Yeah.
But, like, that was a great moment for the team and for Vettel, and it was really cool to see that.
I think, you know, even Sebastian Vettel's, he comes across, he's a lot more likeable than Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
Because Sebastian's got that sort of that charisma about him, whereas even Fernando Alonso can be quite reserved at times, quite blunt. And that's okay, you know, he's fine, he's a legend of the sport in his own right, but I just think pairing him and Stroll from a purely entertainment standpoint is quite bland.
No, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if there'll be any interesting moments.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, where's the drama going to come from? Like, oh, I don't know. But it's not, I know it's not all about the drama, it's about results, it's about racing, but yeah, I don't know. I would love to see Aston Martin do well. If there was ever a race that they managed to fight their way into, like, the top 10, top 6, I would be really happy. I'd be like, that's great.
Okay, so you'd always root... If you saw Aston Martin qualify well, you'd be going into the race being like, let's see them convert that.
But the problem is, I'd be happy for the team, but I wouldn't even be hyped for the driver. You know, if it was Lance Stroll, I'd just be like, ah. Means he might, you know, stay around a bit longer.
Yeah, but, right.
Yeah, I mean, those are my three, like... obviously I wanted to have that chat about Aston Martin. My truthful three that week in, week out, I would obviously actively support would be Red Bull, McLaren and Williams. But I thought I'd just add in Aston Martin as an interesting point. Like, it's, I just feel like they're close, but so far away still. It's annoying.
Yeah, no, I actually would, I have to definitely rethink, like, how I feel about Williams for sure, like, over Haas, because... You're right, Williams has the history. We've just looked at Haas's history.
Yeah.
Williams has a much more interesting history.
Mm.
And if we see the driver line up next year, yeah, that's another decision we have to see, like who becomes both of their second driver.
I would say with Haas, though, they're a bit of a blank canvas, which is also exciting. So I wouldn't suggest you to question, like, your support of them at all. Like, it's almost exciting to see there be such little history and watching them write it as they go now. Like, you know, if our children in 20 years' time are watching Formula One and they're big fans of Haas, or if Haas have become the next Ferrari, right? We could talk about how we were there when they were in their early days, in their infancy.
It'd be great to see Haas stick at it, beat the odds, and have a great period like Williams, McLaren, a lot of those teams that are here now have had. It'd be great to see Haas do that. So you're right, there is a bit of a blank canvas there and potential in beating the odds, which would be quite cool.
Yeah. Super exciting.
Super exciting.
Well, I love how our short episode has turned into a full episode. So
full episode.
Hopefully no one's complaining too much about that. But wow, I think considering there has been no racing on for a couple of weeks, we've probably done quite well to squeeze that out. But we've got the Singapore Grand Prix coming up this weekend. I'm sure we'll both be watching it live.
Yes, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
I do like Singapore, so it's an exciting circuit. So if anybody's listening out there that would like to try Formula One for the first time, this is a good race to do so. if you can bear the early start time.
Exactly. It's on Spark Sport if you're here in New Zealand.
Yep. 3 a.m. or something like that.
Something like that.
We'll be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for it.
Good luck. All right. Catch you later, Rory.
Catch you later, Josh. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to 3Pre1Cast. If you want to catch up on any of our episodes, check us out on Plains FM, Apple Podcast, or Spotify.
Come and say hi to us on Instagram and TikTok at 3Pre1Cast.